step away from the world, certainly for a period of time each day, if even if I engage in interaction through the day, if even for a moment I'm able to step aside, pause and reflect, turn inward, then I return to the role that I'm playing with a greater capacity to be able to fulfill the demands of that role. In inner silence, not only do I see what qualities I need to use to express in that role, but I also see what it is that the role demands in terms of others, and I'm able to satisfy those demands also. Stepping away means something else. Usually, when I'm engrossed in the role that I play, I see only a very tiny portion of the world's dramatic stage. I see only that little patch on which I stand. I'm not able to see on the other two sides. I'm not able to see in front of me. I'm not able to see behind me. I don't have an overall picture of what's going on the entire stage. Stepping away from my role and just returning to that true eternal identity, which is unchangeable, which is unshakable. I'm able then to understand exactly what is happening on the third stage. I don't just see my narrow little patch, but I'm able to have an extended vision and see how my role fits within the cosmos, within the context of all the other scenes that are occurring on the stage simultaneously, as I at my role, so I see what's happening with others also as they play their role, and I'm able to harmonize much more easily. The other thing that happens when I learn to step back is that because I'm now seeing the unlimited scenes of the drama unfold in front of me, I'm able to appreciate the continuity that is taking place. Usually, my narrow vision means that I only understand a very tiny portion of the drama. I don't see it in the context of what came before and what is to follow on afterwards. But stepping away means developing the clarity with which I'm able to see the past, the conditions that have created this particular scene. I'm able to see what the results of this scene are likely to be in the future. I'm able to look into the future and see that. And because I can see both the past and the future clearly, I'm able to understand exactly what it is I need to do at the present time, here and now, on the world drama stage, which of course makes a very big difference in terms of my responses to the situation and my behavior on the world stage. When you go to see a drama in a physical world, you don't expect to have one scene that remains static all the time. We expect to see many changes, and the more dramatic the changes that there are, the more exciting that drama seems to be. We have to remember that as we watch the scenes of life unfold in front of us also. Sometimes we become so attached to one individual that we want that relationship to be constant, to be continuous, and of course, it's very unlikely that that's going to happen. Any relationship will have a time span, and whether that relationship comes to an end because there's physical separation through death or choice or whatever it may be, that's one factor. But the other is that generally, most things go through a state of entropy, a state of decay. And usually, the same thing happens to relationships also. We expect a relationship to be as beautiful as the first day when you see the bud of a flower. And that flower bud blossoms, it opens, but having blossomed fully, then that flower also begins to wilt, and finally it decays. We don't expect the flower to remain constantly beautiful. If it did, we'd say it was highly unnatural, that it just wasn't real, that it was rather artificial. But the same is true of everything within this world, including relationships. There's a point through which the relationship flowers and blossoms, but usually we find that there'll also be a situation where there's that stagnation that comes in, or that decay that takes place. But of course, our attachments are such that we can't accept this. We want it to stay as ever, forever. And the drama means that there's constant change. Not just in relationships, but also in circumstances. Is it possible for the season to always be spring? Is it possible, because I say I like the summer, for the sun always to be shining? We would say that that's a dream, it's not a reality. And again, the same thing applies in terms of our life experience. There'll be days when there's beautiful sunshine, but equally, there'll be days when the grey clouds will come and hide the sun, and the sun will be there, but it won't be visible to our eyes. It'll be hidden from our sight. But yet we know that the clouds also don't last forever. The sunshine is unlikely to last forever, but equally, the clouds aren't going to last forever either. They'll come, but after a period of time, they'll pass away, and the sun is still there waiting for us. And so when there are storms that come in our life, at that point of time, we feel that this situation is going to drag on through eternity. And that's not true. It's come, but it must also pass. And the test that takes place along the way is how I'm able to deal with that storm. The storm will have come and will go surely, but in what condition will it have left me? Will it have influenced me so that I'm unhappy and sorrowful? And because I feel bad, I make others around me feel equally bad? Or am I able to maintain an inner state of stability as I witness all the scenes that are taking place around me and in front of me? And the drama teaches me that change is constant, and change is automatic, and change is natural. But within all the changing scenes around me, I have to find that point of inner stability so that I don't move as the scenes around me move, that I'm able to be in touch with my own state of peace and my own state of truth, no matter how the changing circumstances may go, in whatever direction it is they may go. So whether it's a scene that seems to be of victory, let me maintain stability inside, because the victory might be superficial. Let me not get carried away by it and think that I reached the end of my destination. But through the victory, yes, why not, let me enjoy it, but let me also stay completely grounded and not carried away. But also, if there's a scene in which it appears that it's a defeat, not really true, because that scene has come to teach me many lessons. And even if on the surface it seems that there's been a defeat, yet on an inner level, what has happened is that if I've learned the lessons that it's come to teach me, then I'm going to be able to take benefit from it, and I'll move on further, and I'll be able to take a step forward in my own spiritual learning. It also happens that if it seems to be a situation of defeat, that I maintain stability, I'm able to serve others around me and give them inspiration too. Because today it's a scene of defeat for me, tomorrow it might be a scene of defeat for somebody else. But my example will have served, and I'll be able to give that subtle cooperation and help to others through my own learning process. Meditation is not only realization of the self and realization of God, but meditation is also very much realization of the cosmic drama and the role that I play within the drama, the way in which I play my role. Let's spend a few minutes taking up this theme for our meditation now. But apart from actually sitting and contemplating in silence, it's important to keep this awareness of being the actor playing a role through this costume, and also being the observer watching myself play the role through the whole game. And at the end of the day, to be able to assess how well did I play my role? Did I remember my eternal identity even as I played my role? Sit relaxed, and I'll share a few thoughts. Perhaps you would like to follow those ideas and practice them with your own awareness. I step inside. I separate my awareness from this physical body, my costume. I am the eternal actor playing a role. And for a few moments, away, not only from my body, my costume, but also from my world. And I go deep within my own inner being. I access treasures of love, of peace, of purity within myself. These qualities are with me eternally. But I had forgotten about this, and so these qualities have disappeared from my life. I now experience them, and I know that this is the reality. I am peace. Keep this awareness as I come back into the awareness of the field of action, the stage of the world drama, and I express these inequalities through the role that I now play on the stage.
Om Shanti.
will be taking up the subject of karma, action, in the context of a lifestyle of meditation. Those things are very intimately connected with each other. Whatever experiences I'm having in meditation will be reflected through the actions that I perform. The actions that I perform will have a very deep impact in the way in which I think and the responses of my mind, which is obviously then connected with the factor of meditation. The other thing is that whatever our relationship may be, that has an influence on our lifestyle and our behavior. Human beings will influence me in a specific way, good or bad. But equally, if I have an inner connection with God, then God's influence is also going to impact my lifestyle. Meditation also means having an inner purification so that my ability to see, to perceive, to understand is heightened. Before I meditate, perhaps the situation is that I see what's going on, but I'm not able to come to any great understanding of what it is that's happening, and because of my lack of clarity, I'm also not able to decide what it is I need to do. The general situation so far has been that we get confused, we take the wrong steps, we feel the repercussions of that come back to us. The more complex the situation becomes, the greater the confusion, the more the mistakes, and we really find ourselves in a trap from which it's very, very difficult to escape. This is why meditation and karma, my life of activity, both go together and influence each other. Karma yoga has been one of the terms given to this path of meditation. On one side, action, and on the other side, silence. The silence teaching me what action I should perform, and the action allowing me to go into the depth of the experience of silence. This path has also been described as Raja Yoga, yoga, the union with God, the inner link, but also Raja, the sovereign. And in the context of my life here on earth, it's not a question of having authority over anyone else. It's very important to appreciate this, because so often relationships and life become a power struggle. Even within one family, if it's three children in the family, there's usually a power struggle that's going on within the three. But equally within the parents and the relationship of the parents and the way they influence each other and the way they influence the children, that also is another power game that goes on. Raj Yoga means to be the sovereign of myself, the sovereign of my mind, first and foremost, so that I can determine the direction of my thinking and my feelings. And then other things follow in a very natural and automatic way, because then, if my thoughts are moving in the right direction, I become the master of my physical senses, my eyes, my ears, my lips, my hands, my feet. In order to be the master over the self, I take power from God and use that power then to be a karma yogi. It means then that I fully appreciate what is going to be the impact of every thought that I have, of the way in which I say things, of the words that I speak, and the things that I hear. Karma yoga means to be aware of what is cause and what is effect, what is action and what is reaction. So often we do things and afterwards we say, "But I wish I hadn't done it." Maybe at that time of making decisions there was lack of clarity, or maybe my conscience was able to give me the right guidance, I lacked the inner power, the willpower, the strength to follow through the dictates of my conscience. I was led astray by external forces, or even perhaps the force of my own negative aspects of personality. Karma yoga means to have the power with which to discern clearly, so that I make the right choices. My own good fortune was that when I came to Raj Yoga, I made the choices with which I'm happy with even today, 25 years later. How many can actually say that? If they were to turn the clock back 25 years, would they be able to say that yes, given the same situation, I would make those same choices? If I can say that, I'm a very fortunate soul indeed, because it means that I did make the right choices. But not even over such a long span of time. Sometimes even a minute later, we say, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. Because it took a minute to say something, and it'll take 6 months to repair the damage of what I did in the space of just a few seconds of a few words. And so karma yoga means to understand, and then secondly, to implement the right thing at the right time, in the right way, so that there is never any cause for regrets, and it means that I guarantee happiness for myself. Very often we like to escape responsibility. We try to put the blame on others. A little child will drop a glass and the glass will break, and then the child will say, but it just happened. The child won't want to take responsibility and say, I made the glass fall or the glass dropped from my hands. But it just happened. But that trait of childhood continues on into maturity and our adult life also. Things take place, and we'll try and avoid responsibility for whatever it is. Or, the other aspect of human nature is that we'll point the finger outwards and say, this one is responsible, or that one is responsible, or the other one is responsible. But the law of karma actually makes us aware that whatever I'm experiencing today is coming to me because of whatever it is I have done in the past. I don't know at what point of time I sowed those seeds, but definitely it's a reality that I sowed those seeds and I'm receiving the fruit today. I cannot allocate it to somebody else and say, they sowed the seeds and I'm receiving the fruit now. Good or bad, I accept responsibility for both. But the other side of the equation is very empowering, because it means that whatever thoughts I say today, I can guarantee that the fruits are going to be in the future. If I sow seeds of hatred and bitterness, then the fruits of sorrow and suffering is what's going to come to me. Yet if today I sow the seeds of good karma, of good wishes, of love, of cooperation with others, then the fruits of that are also guaranteed and they're going to come back to me. Although the word karma is of course action, yet there can be not just the physical actions that we perform, but action is also related very much with thought. If my thoughts are seeds, then those seeds also bring very powerful returns in terms of fruits. Good thoughts, and the fruit of that is a good feeling inside, happiness within, a good atmosphere that's generated, and an environment in which good things will happen. Bad thoughts, negative thoughts, and there's going to be an impact within my own state of being and my consciousness, in which I'll be left with a bad feeling, that others will be able to pick up this vibration of negativity from me, and so I damage that connection with others also. The thoughts also reach out into the environment and create vibration. And so the vibration that I create around me will be of negativity, which means that even if there had been the possibility of good things to happen, because I have generated a negative atmosphere, it's now very difficult for good things to materialize. And of course I didn't realize this. I have a bad thought, a negative thought, and then afterwards good things aren't happening. And then I say, you see, I knew it wasn't going to happen. I didn't realize that I actually negated the possibility of something good happening. But the other side is very powerful. Let me constantly have good thoughts, and as a result of my positive thoughts, my good thoughts, I'll see wonderful things of God's magic happening around me. I'll see the beauty of life unfold in front of me. And so karma is very much connected to what's going on in my own inner world. Not just on the question of thought and impact of thought, but also in terms of my physical action and the motivation with which I perform the action. For example, I donate 5,000, whether it's 5,000 rupees, $5,000, whatever it may be. But the value of that donation is actually connected with the motive with which I gain. It can be of the highest motive. I only have a little, but what little I have, out of the love and compassion in my heart, I want to share with another being who is in need, whose need is greater than mine. And so I'm going to give something of what belongs to me, and I share it with that individual. Now that is good karma, definitely, because my motive is of compassion and love. And that good karma not only is an act of charity in which another human being benefits, but that pure act is also that karma by which I come very close to God. Good karma, good action, good deeds, good thoughts, is a very powerful method of building up a connection with God in which the relationship becomes a very deep, significant, very sweet one. It also means that because I have done that which is right, that which is good, I have guaranteed that in the future I will receive the return for this. But the immediate return that I receive from this is the power that comes from God for doing that which is right, and secondly, the happiness that my heart feels when I see that I'm doing that which is right. And so good